What happens when you die, Amy? Of course, I don't mean hypothetically or theologically. I already know that. Well, sort of. It's blurry and incomplete, obviously, but I know enough to say that I know what happens when people in general die. I'm talking about specifically you, Amy. When you die, years and years and years from now, what will happen? Will I be able to cross over with you, or will I be stuck here? I know I've said that it feels like I could collapse into the fog that surrounds me here in the in-between place, let it consume me, but I have no way to really know. It's inviting, sure, but I can't test it without giving in completely. The most inviting things are the things we can't obtain, everyone knows that, so what if I'm stuck here, Amy? What if you cross over when it's time and I try to follow after you, but I can't? Because we were both too selfish to let go of the me that exists, at least partially exists, here in this world. I won't try to leave, though. I promised I wouldn't, and I won't. But if you get to leave and I am stuck in this fog, Amy, I think that would be the one thing I could never forgive you for. I promise to stay, but in return, you have to promise to let me follow you when it's time to go. I slept surprisingly well the night after I read the letter from my AWOL Aunt Mabel. You'd think that after something like that, I'd lie awake all night, trying to piece everything together, failing to convince my brain to wait until the morning, but it didn't really need any convincing. I slept like a rock. I don't remember having any dreams. I woke up the next morning, and I put on some decent clothing, and I left my house, pausing to pull the door shut behind me because it doesn't like to do that on its own. I crossed the street without bothering to look both ways. I know. Usually I'm all about street safety, I rarely even jaywalk, but there's really no point in maintaining those rules in my neighborhood. Well, I guess it isn't really much of a neighborhood. There's only one short street, and it dead ends into a forest, and three of the five houses here are uninhabited. The other lived-in place is right across the street from us. It belongs to a quiet, reclusive couple called the McKerchers. Mrs. McKercher was almost as predictable as my mother. She likes to station herself in a chair just behind the living room window so she can peer out at the world. Mr. McKercher is harder to track. He moves around wherever he likes, and he doesn't seem inclined to any particular habits. That morning, he was standing out on the porch, holding binoculars to his face so tightly I could tell there would be red rings around his eyes later. Mr. McKercher watched me approach his house through the binoculars, keeping them trained on me. Not in any threatening way, just in an I really can't be bothered to lower my arms right now kind of way. I smiled to him. He didn't smile back, but he said, "Vera, interesting day, isn't it?" The sky was a black-yellow sludge, the kind of sky that threatens bad rain but never produces anything before shifting away, like all it wanted was the attention people give to a stormy sky. "Yes," I said. I had made it to their driveway, and Mr. McKercher had looked away from me and back to whatever it was he wanted to be seeing. "Mr. McKercher," I said, "I came over to ask if I could take some newspapers, the newest ones, if that's okay." He answered with a grunt and a wave of his hand, which meant that it was okay. There are five houses on my street, two with living people in them, but only the McKerchers have any newspapers delivered to them. They receive every variation of posts, times, and reporters, and they let them pile up morning after morning in their front yard. Never seen them open any of them, not sure why they keep getting them delivered. I pulled the most recent seven off the top of the stack, which was muddy and dewy and biodegrading on top of itself as more papers were added on each day. Before turning back around, I waved to Mrs. McKercher through the window, and she smiled brightly and waved back with almost alarming enthusiasm. I turned to go and thanked Mr. McCrutcher as I passed by him. "Interesting day," he said. I'm not sure that he heard me thanking him or leaving. Interesting day. When I got back inside, big surprise, my mother hadn't moved. I didn't feel like sitting next to her, and it gets awkward trying to work around her, so I went into the table in the living room instead. I peeled back the layers of each paper until I got to the obituaries. I read through each of them, carefully going over every word. There were two obits for Sarah Hudson, who used to own the grocery store just blocks away from my home. There was one for Zayam Puri, a man who had apparently passed away after a complication from surgery. It was a kidney transplant. Mr. Puri had agreed to give his kidney to someone in need, and it had cost him his life. The someone in question was a rodeo clown named Big Larry, who swore to dedicate every future performance to Puri and his family. All of this I could find in the papers, name after name, story after story, but nothing on Nolan Packett. I checked the dates again. I had papers as recent as yesterday and as distant as 3 weeks ago. Bodies don't keep for too long before being buried, so going back further would do no good. I thought for a while. If Nolan wasn't featured in a local paper, a statewide paper, or a national paper, all of which I had in my selections, then he might still be living? Was Mabel just being, hopeful isn't the right word, but hopeful? That he would die before the funeral that someone had just gone ahead and planned out. Sometimes people can predict another person's time of death. I supposed that if there was nothing in the obituaries about him, he must still be alive. Not living, not really, but still here. Hanging on. My next step, then, was to visit the hospital. I felt happy, sort of, knowing that Nolan might still be alive. It felt better to have the possibility of some answers. He would have to know something about my family for my aunt to have written about him. Maybe I would catch him on a good day where he was conscious and alert and ready to talk. I caught a bus from the stop three neighborhoods down. The hospital was huge, a blocky white building that looked more imposing than healing. I went in. The sounds of the sick were all around me, like an infectious surround sound that couldn't be unplugged. Coughs, sneezes, sniffles, heavier coughs, heavier sneezes, heavier sniffles. It was to be expected, given the venue, but it was still hard to listen to. I waited my turn to get to the front desk of the main reception area. Four people sat behind it to maximize efficiency and minimize wait times for those who needed it most. They all looked tired, like they had been at their jobs since 3 a.m. and had seen too much but couldn't leave just yet. I walked over to the lady who had waved me forward, the one sitting two seats from the line. "What can I help you with? Are you in need of priority attention for your health?" she asked, smiling past the gray smudges of the bags under her eyes. "My health is okay," I said. "I just need to ask about the location of a patient." "Name and relation of the patient?" she asked, fingers hovering over the keyboard of the computer in front of her. Nolan Packett? That's P-A-C-K-I-T-T, and a family friend." The fake smile was gone, and the lady, Heather, if her name tag was accurate, was all tired business again. She typed on her computer and frowned. "We have no record of a patient by that name. Maybe he's in a specialized care unit in the area. Will that be all?" I bit my lip in disappointment. Then I thought a little and I asked, "Can you look up visitors? I'd like to know if anyone by the name of Mabel LeFay has come through here." Heather raised an eyebrow and then decided she didn't get paid enough to care. She typed again and clicked some things. "No Mabel, sorry. Will that be all?" I nodded, then changed my mind again, much to poor Heather's annoyance. "I'm actually not sure if this patient is living," I said awkwardly. There's no way to say that in a fashion that is not awkward. Would there be anywhere that he'd be if he had passed recently? Heather blinked. Let me look him up in the deceased log. She said it like a question. I couldn't really blame her. Oh, she said, after typing and clicking. She was about to say something else when she looked back at her computer. Her face bunched up like she had physically bitten down hard on her tongue but had surprised herself by doing so. It took her a moment to unbunch it. No, she ended up saying. Nobody by that name. I nodded and turned to go. I thought I imagined it when I heard Heather say something after me under her breath. I turned anyway. She locked eyes with me, and there was a weird light in them, like she was defying something inside of herself to talk to me further. We have a morgue here, she said, her voice sounding half-choked. After this, she bit her tongue again and winced. I thanked her, but she was focusing on fighting off whatever had overtaken her internal systems. I had no other leads, so it was a journey to the morgue for me. What fun.